Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special story on the cover story right after this. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of our two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. And this school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, a citation, or a complaint. Now, rule number one is don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. Now, if you can learn rule one, you can win about 90% of your legal cases. And that's because all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. Now, your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever, so don't give the prosecutor the victory. At least make him work for it. Now, listen to what the courts have had to say about keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation and, in some cases, police intimidation. And this one judge put it this way. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? And he said that in U.S. versus Dickerson. Second judge said, you can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment in Belknap versus United States. And then the third judge put it this way. He said, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and to shield the imprudent as well as the innocent and the farsighted. And he said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc. That's for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives. All right, we're talking about the cover story. Everybody's got a cover story. You've got one. I've got one. Government's got it. Every institution, every business. When we want to lie and deceive people, we have to have a cover story that'll justify what it is we're doing. So in order to justify the war in Iraq, President Bush said, well, that guy's got weapons of mass destruction over there, and so we got to go to war and take them away from him. Which makes absolutely no sense because the North Koreans, they've got weapons of mass destruction, and we're not going over there to take the weapons away from them. The Chinese have weapons of mass destruction, the Russians, and a whole bunch of other people, and we're not out there knocking on their doors trying to take their weapons of mass destruction away from them. And on and on and on it goes. I mean, there's just no end to this. But you and I, you know, the little Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives down here, you know, we have to live with this. I don't make these rules. I don't know if they're good, bad, right, or wrong. I didn't make the war in Iraq, and I couldn't stop it. But there it is. You know, they're right out there in front of it. But I don't have to buy into all of the BS that everybody's handing me. And neither do you, and neither do I. And I would suggest we take a look at this. And I'm telling a story here now in the last couple of days dealing with antique firearms because there's a classification of persons that our government has designated as being dangerous people that should not have firearms. Now, one of these classifications of persons are those who have renounced their American citizenship. And I just want to ask you, just because somebody wants to renounce his American citizenship, why does that make him dangerous to you or dangerous to me? What that really boils down to is we disagree with your politics and we're going to punish you for it. Now, I don't know if that's good policy or bad policy. I don't agree with it. But, you know, just because that's the policy doesn't make it right, but I can't change the policy. So we've got these nine classifications of persons, and I'm not necessarily trying to get these people armed. I don't care whether they have a gun or don't. No skin off my back one way or the other. But it illustrates one of those facts in American society and American law, and that is that there are butt-saps written into the law. And so I started off and I said, okay, we got a law that says you got to get vaccinated, but that doesn't apply to everybody. And if you want to be one of the exceptions, one of the butt-saps, you can be. I'm not trying to get you people to stop vaccination. I don't care whether you vaccinate or not. But 12% of us don't want it, and that 12% is constantly being pressured by the 88% that do, and especially by government and the police power. You better do this because it's the law. Well, okay, it is the law, and it does apply to a lot of people, but it doesn't apply to everybody, and anybody that wants to get out of it can. You have to know how, and you have to follow all of the laws, rules, and regulations. What happens here is that your school nurse is never going to tell you this is the way you avoid vaccinations. She wants you to be vaccinated. She believes in it. Same thing with the census, same thing with the voting. You know, I'm not opposed to people voting. Hell, if that's what you want to do, get after it. But this idea, you know, that if you vote, you're going to solve some problem over here, that's a fiction. I mean, think about it for a minute. If voting was going to solve the unemployment problem or the global financial crisis, or it was going to solve anything over there, you wouldn't have a global financial crisis. You wouldn't have any unemployment. The voting would have already solved the problem, or it would have prevented it. You people have been voting now for 200 years, and the problems get worse every election cycle. Now, that doesn't mean that voting caused your problems, but it does mean that voting hasn't solved it or prevented it. So if I don't vote in the next election, it isn't going to make two hoots and a whirlwind worth of difference as to the outcome, and I've pointed that out to you. My uncle Esau controls both political parties in the United States. It doesn't make any difference whether George Bush spends us into bankruptcy or Barack Obama spends us into bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is bankruptcy, and that's where we're headed. The train has already left that station. Just make up your mind, national bankruptcy is the next stop. So now, I need to have a solution for that. I've got to solve that problem for little Georgie Gordon. You need to solve that problem for you. Now, I'm satisfied with my solution, and voting isn't the solution. But I've got a solution, and I'm satisfied with doing what I'm doing. And I'm not here to beat the gong and to get you to follow me. I don't care what you do. But in the interest of just reason, logic, and common sense, you know, these government agencies, they've got these cover stories out here. Your businesses, you know, the major corporations, they've got their cover stories out here. And they're basically hypocrisy and lies. And when we follow those hypocrisies and we follow those lies, it costs us a lot of money. It causes us a lot of grief. And I'd like to suggest that there might be a better solution to that. All right, now we're talking about this thing of guns and ammunition. Now, I've covered this thing of the guns themselves and antique guns. But ammunition poses a separate problem because the government doesn't want you to have a gun, and they sure as hell don't want you to have bullets to put in it. So when the laws are written up, they have to be written up so that they comply with our Constitution. It is true, government can regulate your rights. They regulate. They can't terminate them. And the government is not terminating your right to keep and bear arms. They're just regulating. They're just putting up roadblocks and making it difficult. They're just making jerks of themselves. They're not. It's the same thing with vaccination. They're not compelling me to get a vaccination. They're just being jerks and making it difficult to avoid it. It means I got to get up in the morning and I got to work twice as hard to avoid it. It's easier to just shut up and roll up your sleeve. If you don't want to do that, you got to do something intelligent. Same thing with the census. Same thing with voting. Same thing here with guns. You know. Now so far, you know, I can still have the modern guns, but one of these days, you know, they might take that away from me. They might say, people with gray hair and beards can no longer have guns because they're a threat to the health, safety, and welfare of the public. Hell, if they can just pick out any class of persons and say, if you've expatriated your citizenship, you can't own a firearm, well, then why can't they say, if you've got gray hair, you can't own a firearm? And then, hell, you know, people, once they get gray hair, you know, they're getting old. You can say, hell, people that are over 70, you know, they might have the shakes, and they might have Alzheimer's disease, and they might forget who they're or how to use the gun, and so therefore we better ban people over 70 from having guns. I mean, they can do that. They haven't done it yet, but they could. So that being the case, then, every time government comes up with an offense, we got to come up with some kind of a defense, don't we? So let's take a look at these bullets here again. These obsolete rounds, various sizes and weights of lead bullets actually fired, are a different story. The DBI books, Cartridges of the World, lists and describes and gives the history of hundreds of obsolete rounds. Now, this author is currently asking the ATF to classify about 100 obsolete rounds as antique ammunition. So far, the ATF has conceded that prohibited persons may possess 58 caliber U.S. musket centerfire, 58 carbine centerfire, and 43 Egyptian Remington centerfire because their extensive research. That's the one. I mentioned this to you last time. That Egyptian gun that I've got up in the attic fires 43 Egyptian Remington centerfire. Then I don't have any bullets for it anyway, but I need to get some. Now, it may be that when you get one of these old guns, you got a problem here. You're going to have to pay through the nose to get 43 caliber ammunition. I mean, that stuff, you know, is about as rare as hen's teeth. But, you know, let's just pick up on it. I've got this old Egyptian bolt-action army rifle, 43 caliber. I've got one of those. That just happens to be one mentioned here in this article. But I don't have any bullets for it, and you're not going to be able to walk into Bass Pro Shop or Walmart and say, hey, give me 10 boxes of 43 caliber Egyptian Remington centerfires here, because they're not going to carry those. Now, you might be able to buy those from Remington. I mean, if you were to write to Federal Firearms or Remington or Winchester, I mean, they make ammunition. But our problem is we need black powder to put in these bullets. Because see, if you're using that smokeless powder, they got you. So we got to have the old black powder. So either you've got to reload these rounds yourself, or you've got to find somebody that's got the brass. The brass means the empty cartridges. Because you can get the primers. That's no problem. You can get the black powder. That's no problem. And you can get the 43 bullets. That is the bullet that's right on the end of the cartridge. So you may have to look around for that. Now, I'm pretty confident that I can find that. I'll go into some gun store and I'll say, look, I got this old 43 Remington centerfire and I need some brass for it. And you'll say, well, I don't have it, but I'll get on and I'll see what I can get for it. You might have to pay $2 or $3 a round. Buy 50 rounds. Cost you $150. But see, once you've got the rounds, once you've got the brass, you can reload those over and over and over again. That's what was so good about those cap and ball pistols. You could reload those rounds, and then you can reload and reload and reload and reload. So you're not depending upon spent ammunition. Modern guns can't do that. See, this modern thing over here, you're relying upon buying this ammunition from the manufacturer. So once you can get divorced from that, and you can reload your own rounds, or you can buy reloaded rounds. There's guys that reload. Just give them the brass and say, reload these. They'll charge you a fee to do that. So that's the way to do that. Now, because of extensive research, has not found any post-1898 guns or replicas that chamber these rounds. Now, incidentally, it took a lawsuit to force the ATF to concede in writing that the 43 caliber Egyptian Remington round was antique, and the threat of a lawsuit to compel concession regarding the other two calibers. As for the rest of the obsolete calibers, it remains to be seen if the courts will publish a decision upholding the ATF's absurd usability interpretation of the phrase designed for use. It seems unlikely that a federal criminal trial jury would. Now, avoiding ammunition problems. The U.S. Constitution authorizes the federal government to prosecute only four crimes. Now, however, the Constitution also contains the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. That allows Congress to regulate commerce between the several states and the Indian territories. Broadly construed by a corrupt Congress and our U.S. court system, this Commerce Clause has enabled the federal government to shove 10,000 federal criminal laws down our throats. And they have expanded the four federal crimes to include everything from pot possession to illegal campfires. They do it under the Commerce Clause. So an essential element of proof of the crime of unlawful possession of firearms or ammunition by prohibited persons is the interstate commerce requirement that the illegal possession was in or affecting commerce. So you might want to underline that. And there's been a number of cases that come down. If you can show that this isn't involved in commerce, and there was a case came out of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals some years back now. I'll interject this one right now. A federal appeals court Thursday overturned a Mesa man's federal conviction of possessing 5 machine guns. A 3-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco reversed the conviction because ruling that the congressional ban does not apply to homemade machine guns and their parts because they were never in the stream of commerce. So here's where they get you. You buy bullets. They're Remington. Well, where is Remington? Well, they're back in Connecticut. Well, then it's a commercial. It's a corporation making ammunition, and they sold it across state lines, and therefore it's an interstate commerce. Whereas, if you could have those bullets done here locally so that it's not in interstate commerce, you can avoid the Commerce Clause, and then they don't have jurisdiction. So every time that you're thinking about doing something, ask yourself, is this involved in some form of interstate commerce? If we can avoid commerce, for instance, if you want to make a machine gun, you can make a Gordon machine gun. You can make a Jones machine gun. You can make a machine gun in your own basement. Your limitations are you don't have a lathe and you don't know how to use it, so you wouldn't know how to do it. This guy did, and he did. And he comes in to the appeals court, and he says, hey, wait a minute, these guys have got their heads up the wrong end here. This material has never been involved in commerce. The feds don't have any jurisdiction here. That's what you need to do with the ammunition. Now, several states have jumped onto that, and they're getting into this, like Montana and others, and they're saying, hey, wait a minute, we're going to exempt if it's not in interstate commerce. So if we can make this stuff here in Montana, then it keeps the feds out of their business. State legislatures are starting to pick up on this. So you tuck that one away in your heart, and if there's some way that you can keep this out of commerce, then you can keep it out of the feds' jurisdiction. This element could be proved by possession during an interstate road trip or even a ride on a common carrier such as a train, plane, or bus. But 99% of the time, the ATF proves the commerce element by showing that the gun or the ammunition moved in interstate after its manufacture. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld this flimsy concept, so if the ATF can show that a modern gun made by Colt Industries in Connecticut was shipped to a dealer in Nebraska, even if that transport took place many years ago, you get caught with it in 1998 or 2010 in any state other than Connecticut, the site of the gun's manufacture, then the commerce element has been proved. All right, so what we need to do then is we need to avoid interstate commerce. So we cannot buy a Remington gun or a Winchester gun. But hey, you can go to your local gunsmith and have him make you a gun. Now it's not in interstate commerce. My daddy did that. He had a gunsmith make a special gun for him using parts and one thing and another, and this gunsmith made him a varmint gun is what he built him. It was a high-speed 218B on a 25-20 frame and with a 218 barrel and a 9-power scope, and it was built short so that it would stick through the wind wing of his 55 Chevrolet so that he could shoot ground squirrels. Prairie dog. So that being the case, then, tuck that one away in your heart. So one way for prohibited persons to legally circumvent federal gun laws to possess ammunition or other firearms, for that matter, that have never moved interstate. For those who live in the same states as the big ammo makers, such as Winchester and Olin, Remington, Peters, Federal, Hanson, CCI, this isn't a problem. But for those that live in states without obvious manufacturers of guns or ammunition, there may still be solutions. First, you can order a list of all federally licensed ammunition manufacturers in your state from the ATF's disclosure branch for $25. Now, this is 1998. They might have a higher fee. Call up the ATF and ask them for their disclosures branch and what the fee is for a commercial reloader. They must also be licensed, and they're therefore on the ATF's list of manufacturers. So if you've got a reloader in your state, see, that guy is now out of interstate commerce. To minimize ATF regulation, you might acquire your ammunition from such an in-state source and be sure to never let it move in interstate commerce. And so here's what your limitation would be there. Let's suppose you live in Montana, and you have a guy there that's making your ammunition for you. But you want to go hunting in Idaho. Uh-oh. The minute you step across the border, now you're in interstate commerce. See, you're moving that across state lines. Now the feds under the Commerce Clause have jurisdiction. So what you're going to have to do then is you've got to move your antique firearm across the state line into Idaho and then buy your ammunition in Idaho. See that? Or if you're reloading your own, then that's your property. Now remember, property's never been assessed or taxed. Go back again to Diefendorf versus Galay, and then I'll settle that issue. You know, you may have to go into court and settle this. You may have to defend. You always want to be prepared. Anytime that you're going to do something, you want to be prepared to defend your actions. What is my legal position here? And your legal position must always be, I'm not in violation of the law. I'm in compliance with the law, and here's what I did to comply with the law. If nothing else, you've got a good faith defense. So you need to watch your back here. Don't just move your homemade ammo. Interstate or ATF fanatics might claim that you designed them for use in modern firearms, even though you made them for use using them in an antique shotgun. So homemade ammunition that has never moved interstate does not violate federal law unless possessed on a common carrier or during an interstate road trip. So remember now, just don't move your homemade ammo interstate, or the ATF, he calls them ATF fanatics. Remember, they're guys just like you and I, and they're working, making their living, and they got to follow their instructions. You know, when you're working for somebody and he says, this is what we're doing, and you got to do this in order for him to keep his job, you know, he's got to enforce the law. So I don't know if they're fanatics. Some of them probably are. Some of them are jerks, but they're not all that way. So watch your six. Now, research and thoroughly understand your own state's law before taking any action concerning antique guns or ammunition. Many states use federal firearm and ammunition definitions verbatim, but they exclude antiques. Others even count BB guns and marine distress flares as firearms. So a call to your local state attorney general's office or local gun rights organization should clarify the situation. However, don't bother calling the police station. They're going to claim that just anything remotely resembling a weapon is illegal. Under federal law, you can have any muzzle loader and its ammunition. Under federal law, you can have any cartridge gun made before 1899, except machine guns or sawed-off shotguns. However, ammunition for antique cartridge guns is a stickier problem. Remember, to violate federal law, it must be a firearm or ammunition as defined in Title 18, U.S. Code Section 921, and Title 27 Code of Federal Regulations, Section 178.11 plus, the firearm or ammunition must have moved in interstate commerce, or if it's not a firearm, that's an excluded antique, or if it was homemade or came from an in-state source and never moved interstate, then you can confidently tell the ATF to go fly kite. Now, you want to note that this law applies to persons possessing, not owning, firearms. Now, readers of the Anti-Shysters Trust Fever series should recall that all trusts are primarily divided into two classes of persons, trustees and beneficiaries, and two classes of title to trust property that is legal and equitable. Trustees own or manage the legal title to trust property. Beneficiaries receive equitable title to use or to possess trust property. So the law's persistent use of the term possession suggests that the prohibited persons may be beneficiaries of some underlying government trust. That's the guardian-ward relationship. If so, anyone who has not or who was not a beneficiary of that underlying trust might not be subject to the trust law against possessing firearms. Again, we see a hint that government may be using trusts to enforce trust regulations as if they were laws enacted by Congress in the ordinary sense. Now, there's a number of ways to circumvent the Constitution, and Congress is working overtime trying to circumvent your Second Amendment rights. Now, you do have something working for you. You do have this new decision by the Supreme Court that the ownership of a gun is a personal and individual right, and so that's helpful. But just based upon the statutes and regulations, if we can maintain our ownership and possession of antique firearms, and then take your antique firearms and make sure that it's an odd caliber, that you're getting the ammunition made for here in your own state, and then don't move it out of state or in interstate commerce, don't try to move it on a Greyhound bus, then there's an exception to the rule, just like vaccination, census, voting, and others of these laws that are enacted, maybe in good faith, but oftentimes, in my view, they're not. They're acted for control purposes. And if that's the case, and if that's what turned John, we'll then take a look at this story on antique firearms. Now, this story came out of an old magazine called the Anti-Shyster. Anti-Shyster magazine used to be published. I don't know if it's still being published or not, but let's give them credit where credit's due here. See if I've got a way to do that. I don't see their... Oh, here it is. Annual subscriptions, $30. The Anti-Shyster news magazine used to be at Post Office Box 540-786, Dallas, Texas. And the zip code in those days was 75354. This is 1998. What is this? Anno Domini. No, this is 1999, Volume 9, Number 1. And it was Al Adask was the editor. Al Adask. Here's a couple of phone numbers for you in case you want to get in touch with them. It's 1-800-477-5508. Again, that's 1-800-477-5508. And the other one was 972. That's their office phone, 972-418-8993. And that, again, is office number was 972-418-8993. I did this series of programs here several years ago, and I hadn't done this one over again for a number of years. That was a pretty good article. I like that one there. It's something that all of us might benefit from. All right, so it came from the Anti-Shyster magazine. The author's name on that wasn't Al Adask. It was somebody else, but that's kind of irrelevant, I guess, at this moment in time. Well, I'll turn over one more page. Who was the author? Mike Crooker, C-R-O-O-K-E-R. Mike Crooker. So there's the story. That's the answer to the cover story. Let's put it that way. Legal firearms for prohibited persons. All right, let me give you another little story over here. The Wolf Company versus Industrial Court. It is the option to deal or to abstain from dealing that usually distinguishes private from quasi-public occupations. And remember I mentioned antique firearms here in the context of Hale versus Hinkle, cited at 201 U.S. 43, and it was on page 75. And then there's another little story in here that deals with warrantless searches and inspections. And then the story here that deals with San Francisco Federal Appeals Court, and it was never in the stream of Congress, you know, making your own firearms. Now, you need to be careful now that you're not making modern firearms in your own basement, because if you're making some modern firearm over here in your basement and you're using ammunition that's got smokeless powder in it, I don't know, boys and girls, you might be getting a little bit too far astray there. You know, there's if you feel confident and cocky doing that, and you study the statutes, and you feel like, hey, I think I can go defend this, then you might want to try that. If not, stick with the tried and true. Go to the ATF, get a letter from them. Yep, that's an antique firearm. Make sure you're using black powder. Reload them yourself. Make sure that you got some kind of an odd caliber, so you're not firing something common like a .22. And try that one out, and I think you'll have some fun. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here. We're at the halfway point, so let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School or the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about cover stories. Vaccination is one, census is another, voting is a third. Well, there was a guy by the name of John Swinton. You remember him, John Swinton? Every once in a while I'll bring up an ad, and I use the Swinton ad here. It's in our $100,000 program, Subsistence and Survival. Let me read it to you. Let me tell you a story here. This guy by the name of John Swinton, back in 1880, he was an editor of a newspaper in New York City. And he was invited to a meeting one time, a journalist meeting, you know, kind of like a Pulitzer Prize, you know, or whatever. And they were going to honor him. You know, he was an old-timey guy in the trades. And so they said, well, listen, let's bring him in here and give him an award, give him a pocket watch or something. And so they did. And, of course, when you're the guest of honor, you know, they expect you to give a, you know, a little speech, 5 minutes. So he did. And it shows us that once in a while, we get a glimpse of the real world through an insider. You know, when you get an insider inside, he knows what the cover stories are, and he's telling the cover stories. And every once in a while, we find one of these insiders. Sometimes they get into the Bilderberger meeting, or maybe into the CFR, or they'll get into the Trilateral Commission, and then, or the World Bank or something like that. And then they come out and they make an expose. And they say, hey, let me tell you what's going on here. And except for those insiders that can tell us what's going on, these secret societies and secret organizations, you know, they're not going to tell us jack diddly squat. And then, of course, the average Joe Sixpack out here, when you tell him that the Federal Reserve isn't federal, it's a private bank, and he looks at you like, oh, you're some kind of a nut. You're a fruitcake. We don't need to persuade these people that we're correct. I don't come on the air here to prove to you I'm smarter than you are, or that you need to believe me, and I can prove that I'm right and you're wrong. I don't care whether you believe it or not. But the Federal Reserve is a private syndicate. It's a private bank. And they went to Congress, and they got a charter, and they got this charter, and now they make all of our currency. See, they make that currency. It says right on the top of it. They're not lying to you. It says Federal Reserve note on there. Now, if you went over to a legal dictionary and looked up the word note, it's not money. It's an obligation. So if you're wondering, you know, why the laws are written the way they are, they're not written accidentally, and there's nobody that's stupid that's writing these laws and putting them into the U.S. Code. These people are geniuses. These people have you snookered. These people write laws, and they snooker you, and they're taking your money and your livelihood, and you think that it's good for you. I mean, that's the genius of it. Not only are they screwing you, blueing you, and tattooing you, they've got you defending them, believing that they are your benefactors. Now, that's genius. Let's just give credit where it's due. But anyway, getting back over here to John Swinton, he's in the newspaper business. See, this is back in 1880, and listen to this story here. John Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet which was given to him by the leaders of his craft. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that, quote, there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. You know it and I know it. Can you imagine Brian Williams or Katie Couric coming over the air and saying, there's no such thing as an independent press? Not in the United States of America in the year 2010. You know it and I know it. Well, that'll be a cold day in hell. Those two people get paid 10. I don't know how much it is. Dan Rather was getting $7 million a year. I imagine Katie's getting something like that. And Brian William, probably the same or more. Boys and girls, when CBS and NBC is paying you $7 million a year, you're going to shut up and you're going to report whatever's on the teleprompter. Then you get lippy and start reporting things, you know, like I do here on the air, or like Bob Chapman does in the International Forecaster, and you're going to be out on the streets looking for another job in short order. And Swinton said so. And he said, furthermore, there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions. And if you did, you know beforehand it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper that I'm connected with. And others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. If Brian Williams ever dared come on the air and tell you the truth about what's going on, which he knows, see, both these guys, and Diane Sawyer, you know, on ABC, I don't know about Diane, and I don't know about Katie, but Dan Rather, the guy before Katie, and the guys before Brian Williams and Diane Sawyer were all members of the CFR. These people aren't innocent. These people aren't ignorant. I mean, you don't get to be, you know, the news anchor on a major network, you know, by being a dummy. You got to be an insider. And these people are insiders, and they know exactly what's going on. They know about the betrayal of America. They understand all that. It's one thing to be snookered. It's another thing to be a co-conspirator. And these guys are all co-conspirators. I suspect that Katie and Diane are both members of the CFR. Maybe of the Bilderbergs, Trilateral Commission, maybe even more. You know, they may come out of Skull and Bones or some other think tank someplace, but they're not dummies. He says the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth. This is the editor. I think it was the New York Herald. And so he goes on and he says, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country, and to sell his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? Boys and girls, this is back in 1880. I'm not talking about 1980 or 1920 or 2000. I'm talking about 1880. My grandmother wasn't born until 1882. And he said, there's no such thing as an independent press in the United States of America in 1880. Well, what in the hell makes you think you got an independent press in 2010? Huh? So let's wake up and smell the coffee. The information that we get over the mainstream press is what they want us to know. Some of it's true, some of it's false, some of it's in between. Now, the Internet doesn't have a whole lot of truth on it either. I mean, you can't believe urban legends and all the crap that's coming out over the Internet. But what the Internet does for us is it gives us some alternative to the pablum that's given to us by the mainstream. And so by comparing the two, we know that there's a contradiction. And then if we can find one or two more witnesses who can testify as to what's really going on here. Now, getting ABC, CBS, and NBC as three witnesses, those guys are all owned by Uncle Esau. Uncle Esau. You're not going to get anything out of that. Those guys will all lie in order to corroborate each other's story. But on the independent press, now there is some independent people out there. On the Internet, those guys, you know, like Rintz, Spiker, Mogambo Guru, the various newsletter writers that you see on Kitco, the newsletter writers, you know, like Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster and the Privateer out of Australia and so on. You know, we can get some truth out of them, and we can put this together, and we can find out what the cover stories are. We can put the story together. But I wanted to point out to you here that, hey, he says, we are tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents and our possibilities and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. That's in 1880. This guy, John Swinton, says, I'm nothing but an intellectual prostitute. But I wanted to let you guys know that. Well, that's exactly what we've got with Katie Couric, Brian Williams, and Diane Sawyer. We've got three intellectual prostitutes, supported by thousands more intellectual prostitutes that put all that program together. All right, now you and I, Joe Sixpack here, you know, Sally, the housewife, and we're trying to figure out what in the hell are we going to do to survive. These guys have an agenda. These guys have a plan. These guys are carrying it out. So what are we going to do to keep these guys from putting us into abject slavery? I mean, they're already raping us, robbing us, and pillaging us. You know, now you got a bunch of us now that are homeless, jobless. Hey, what are we going to do? You know, we need some solutions. So I contend the first step over here, well, let's blow the damn cover story off and find out what in the hell's going on. How's that for a plan? So this Federal Reserve over here, you know, that's a That's as phony as a $3 bill. Let me show you another one over here while we're talking about this. The protocols of the learned elders to go along with this John Swinton story. Listen to what the learned elders in 1884, 4 years after Swinton makes this observation. We shall handle the press in the following manner. This is the 12th protocols of the learned elders of Zion. We shall handle the press in the following manner. We shall saddle it and keep tight rein upon it. We shall do the same also with other printed matter. For of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? Not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. We've attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. Literature and journalism are two most important educational forces, and consequently our government will become the owner of most of the journals. If we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 of our own, and so on. This must not be suspected by the general public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless. So when you're watching Reuters, UPI, or AP, that's managed news. When you see 60 Minutes, Fox News, Newsweek, the News Hour, and so on, hey, listen, that's pablum that's being fed to you. How do we know that? John Swinton. God love him. You know, if it hadn't been for Swinton, who comes out and says, hey, let me tell you how this works, we wouldn't know that. If it hadn't been for Henry Ford publishing the protocols, we wouldn't know. All right, so let's take a look here at another one here. We got a story here which is called The Sun is Shrinking. Let me show you what the cover story is. This is evolutionary philosophy. Now, we all went to public school, and we all got, you know, educated and indoctrinated in evolution, didn't we? So, have you ever thought about this cover story, evolution, and kind of molded over in your brain? Is there any common sense to it, a common thread of common sense? So, I'm going to tell you a little story over here, and then let's start analyzing this. Now, Charles Lyell was one of the pillars of modern geology, and Charles Lyell published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most who believe these concepts of Charles Lyell don't even know who it was that originated these concepts, these ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins has been devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes back through time indefinitely. And that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood have been strictly ruled out. And this is called science. They come along and they say, well, science believes. Science has discovered. Science discovered what? Science has a definition. Go look it up in the dictionary. Science means knowledge. What in the hell do you mean science has discovered? Knowledge doesn't discover anything. Knowledge is a revelation. God, in Proverbs chapter 1, says there's three things that you want in life. Knowledge is one of them. But what if we have knowledge that's false? How in the hell does false knowledge benefit us? And how do you know that this knowledge that you've got is the truth? So we look in the Bible and God says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And along comes some guy and says, oh no, science has discovered that's a lie. And that the Big Bang came along and that's why we have all of this mass and matter out here. It wasn't created by God, it was the Big Bang. Okay, so now we have this controversy. And the guy that creates the controversy now is this guy who says science has discovered. It's like they say. Well, who in the hell is they? Can you identify this mysterious they? Can you tell me who this science is? Who came up with this? Nobody ever asks. Nobody ever thinks about it. We go to school and we read books, and these books are nice books, and they've got glossy pages. Well, what if the book has got some false knowledge in it? Let's just take a science book. Can you point to a science book that's used in common usage today from 1800? Can you point to a science book used in common usage today from 1850, 1900 or 1950? Well, that's 150 years, 1800, 1850, 1900, 1950. So from 1800 to 1950, that's 150 books. Not a one of those science textbooks is on the shelf today. And why is that? Well, because the crap that they were teaching people in 1800 was discovered by 1850 to be nonsense. What they were teaching in 1850, by 1900, they figured out, well, most of that ain't true, and so we got to rewrite it. And so we're constantly rewriting our textbooks. We have not rewritten our Bibles yet. We're trying to. We started that in 1880. I reported on that one for you. So we took 64,000 words out of the Bible. How in the hell does that advance knowledge by taking 64,000 words out of the original? How can you explain that? And it's because somebody said, well, it's not true. See, that God didn't discover this. That's false. Well, listen to this. The sun is shrinking. That's a Newswire report of March 1980. And it made a surprising statement. The sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by 0.1% per century. Scientists have been watching for over 100 years now, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. And if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, then the diameter of the sun would be 93 million miles in diameter. It would be touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. It's consistent not because we know that it's been consistent since the origin of the sun. We don't know how long the sun's been there. But Charles Lyell came up with an idea, and he said, well, what you see today is what's been going on forever in the past and will continue to go on forever in the future. You can forget about this crap of God and miracles and so on. But hang on a second. Don't you remember when you went to school, they taught you that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago? Now, these same scientists that told you that the sun is shrinking by 5 feet a day, and that's where you're paying your tax dollars, also are telling you, the same science now, different guys in a different discipline are telling you all the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. These guys can't add and subtract. Hell, you can do the arithmetic on that kind of pseudo-scientific lie, can't you? So on the one hand, we've got these astronomers over here telling us that the sun is burning up at 5 feet an hour. Another group are telling us, hey, the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. Do the arithmetic, boys and girls. 5 feet an hour. 5 feet an hour. Trace that back for 20 million years. And you find that the sun was 93 million miles in diameter. What a bunch of crap. That's a cover story. It's a cover story to tell you so that you will discount and you won't believe Genesis 6, 7, and 8. And at least Genesis 6, 7, and 8 doesn't contradict itself like science does, or pseudoscience, I should say. Hey, I'm about out of time here, so I got to remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and